What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. I know a few hours later than usual, but hey, better late than never. Let's go ahead and get into the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. I have an interview with FTR that will drop hopefully next week, but I talked to them about Edge and Randy Orton. And Dax and Cash told me that Orton actually flew to Asheville, North Carolina and worked with them on the greatest wrestling match ever. So they have maintained their positive relationship with Randy Orton, even though that pitched stable between the three did not end up working out. Randy Orton did go to bat for them. We'll have more on that next week. But that is Asheville, North Carolina, so that's where Edge lives as well. Said that Orton wanted to sharpen up his technical wrestling. Now, here's the thing. Cash does not live there anymore. Cash actually moved to Florida. I just don't know if that move happened before or after this. But I also asked about them helping out Edge. And we saw Cash Wheeler, the former Dash Wilder, as a part of that Edge documentary where he went to work with him ahead of his in-ring return. But that wasn't just it. Dax says that he went and worked with Edge a year before he even returned. Now, this is not the time where we saw Beth Phoenix and Natalya working with them and Edge in the ring as well. This was Dax going to work with Edge, and Edge had never bumped around since his neck injury. And Cash says that he ended up calling a belly-to-back suplex on the fly, and Edge wasn't expecting it. However, Edge took the bump. He said he felt great, and he was happy that he knew that he would be able to take that move, because a lot of times it's the bumps that you don't realize that are coming, or the bumps that don't go the way that you had expected. Now, Edge did have Beth Phoenix to train with, who is a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest women's wrestlers of all time, but and Edge said that he knew that she was going to take it easy on him, and he couldn't have that. Ultimately, before him being a wrestler and before him making a return, Edge is her husband, and Edge is the father of their children. So he knew that even though he could count on Beth Phoenix to do something in the ring with him, he knew that ultimately she was going to take it easy on him because she knew everything that he had been through. She knew that he had had a tough road back, and she wanted to protect that as well as the well-being of the father of her children and her husband. So that's why he decided to bring in the now FTR to kind of help him out. WWE Draft. We published a report this past week about major draft plans that have been changed. In June, we were talking to a lot of different sources, both close to the USA Network, close to WWE, close to Raw and SmackDown's teams. And the plan was to have a draft at the end of August. Now, when the plans of the scrapped live shows in July happened, or when the plans for live shows were scrapped in July, the draft was moved as well. We were told that it was moved back to September, it was moved back to October, then back and forth again. The original story that we heard from our source back in June was that WWE had informed some broadcast partners of draft plans and live event plans. Again, live event plans were nixed completely. The most recent plans that we have heard of were that the WWE draft was set in October. Now, who knows how that will work? A lot of planned things like that do change. That's quite frankly, I mean, the nature of this story is that they were supposed to have it at the end of this month. They're not having it at the end of this month anymore, at least as of right now. Oh, man. Who knows, man? Who knows? We have a lot from that that Good Brothers interview that you may not have picked up on. A lot of people forget that Gallows, Anderson, AJ Styles had talks with TNA Wrestling in late 2015 that never quite came to fruition. Gallows and Anderson told me that they met with Dixie Carter and John Gaburik at Dixie Carter's house in Tennessee, and Anderson said that he wasn't feeling the offer and that they were happy in New Japan, but the schedule was getting tough for them to handle, and they wanted to broaden their horizons into America. Now, Access had started to pick up New Japan at that point, and they were starting to get some traction in that regard. However, they had a bit of a brother meeting outside, and Anderson said it wasn't working for him. He didn't quite like the TNA offer, and shortly thereafter, they ended up getting a WWE offer and going with that. We also spoke about how TNA very oddly spoiled their WWE debut, which everybody kind of knew was coming, sort of. They said, we were supposed to have all three of these guys in, and now we don't. And Gallows Anderson said it was very odd. You could tell somebody was very pissed off there. And the regime that is there now is completely different than the one that they had going on back then that they spoke to. Like, John Gaborik isn't there. Dixie Carter isn't there. He said that everything's great now. And they're very helpful with the pay-per-view and the team's immediate drawing power. They were very happy about how things like that went. And I can tell you that Access TV is very happy with them. Speaking of that show, holy crap. Talking Choppamania, that was insane. It was some of the most fun that I had had watching quote-unquote wrestling in quite a while. It was a blast. I talked to them about that. And Gallows said that he pitched it to Anderson the day they got fired and was able to get them on board. Impact Wrestling was on board promoting the brand, their show, and an upcoming beer, which were all important to getting them signed. Anderson even said that he's loving Impact Wrestling and would not mind being there the rest of his career, which is wild, man. We also talked about their friendship with the Young Bucks, and Gallows and Anderson straight up said that things were a little bit rough, but they make money decisions, and that they kept in touch the whole way through. Things ended up snowballing, and things are fine now, but Anderson's known them for a very long time, as has Rocky Romero. But Rocky Romero actually brought up that the Young Bucks kind of buried them. Like, what the fuck are they doing? Whenever they made the signing. But I talked to Rocky, and he said that New Japan made significant changes to the way that New Japan locked up talent after the mass exodus of 2016 that saw Anderson, Gallows, Styles, and Nakamura all leave. He wasn't particularly worried about somebody in New Japan having to step up in the absence of those four big names, because New Japan's always had bullets in the chamber for that type of thing, and he was more bummed out about not having his friends around to travel with, but was clued into their plans along the way. He said that he was made aware of everything that was going on and how things would unfold. Ricky Starks signed with AEW, though. He did an interview with Jeremy Lambert over half an hour. Made me very happy that we were able to get that. We've gotten quite a few AEW interviews of late. So he said that he actually never heard his theme music until he came out, and that Mikey Ruckus put the song together, but it's not one that he worked together with Starks on. Ricky said that he was not nervous to have his match with Cody because he worked hard to get where he is and feels like he belongs in the ring with Moxley and is ready to show people that. He spoke very highly of the locker room there as well, but noted that he wasn't pitched the idea of joining Taz and Cage as much as Taz took a liking to him and wanted to bring him in. He's known Cage for quite a while, so he feels as if things fit in. He also addressed his fashion sense and said that he doesn't like comparisons to The Rock, but he just wants to dress nice and dress a little bit different. And he says that wrestling fans aren't conditioned to seeing that. They're conditioned to seeing people come out in a black t-shirt or something like that. And I completely agree. If you want these wrestlers to stand out and look like stars, then they should look like stars. They shouldn't come out there in the same thing every single week in their gear if they're not even wrestling. It looks weird. Ricky also told Jeremy that AEW crowds aren't really given any direction as to what they could or should be doing, and said that he doesn't think that that would work out really well, and he wouldn't want direction in that manner anyway. Others that we have spoken to have said they have just been encouraged to have fun and detach from being a worker, being a wrestler a little bit, and just make it a fun experience. Leon Ruff seems like he's having a fun experience. He signed an NXT deal, and as Fightful had kind of put out there, he isn't the only Evolve name that we're going to see land in the company, but they all ain't coming there. In fact, there have been several, I know of one especially, that has been passed on. But Leon Ruff is well-liked. He's getting some rave reviews from his peers. He's appeared on Raw, Main Event, NXT, SmackDown, 205 Live, all over the place. He's been on every brand. I had one wrestler that compared him to Jeff Hardy, an early Jeff Hardy, like mid-90s Jeff Hardy, although obviously Leon's a little bit older than Jeff Hardy is. 24, still young, but Jeff was like 17, 18 when he was working those. But says that he was a guy that would be there as an extra enhancement guy that everybody would want to work with because he goes out of his way to make everything look good and wants to help get everybody over because he knew that it made him look better as well. I mean, that's what the wrestler said, not what Leon said. But there have been pitches for him on other brands, like full-time pitches. For I know 205 Live before he landed in NXT, so good for him. Good for some of these talented wrestlers in Evolve. Kairi Sane, another update on Kairi Sane. Even though the rumors of her departure have been swirling for months, this was the original end date for her. WWE wanted to keep her on board in some capacity, but Kairi Sane let it be known months ago that she wanted to return to Japan to be with her husband. And we're told there are no concerns of her wrestling elsewhere in America, but that there were big pushes to have her involved from a coaching or teaching aspect in Japan. WWE did a lot of things to try to keep her around, to try to keep her on the payroll, and to keep her out of other companies. But I'm told that there's not even really a concern in that regard, that she would wrestle for AEW or Ring of Honor or something like that. Instead, it's just she wants to go home. So best of luck to her. We're definitely going to miss covering her work. She's fantastic. Raw versus SmackDown. Not the kind that you want. The old video game that didn't suck like most of the video games do today for WWE. Following up on the Paul Heyman-Bruce Pritchard shakeup, I learned that Paul Heyman was known to take the idea of a Raw versus SmackDown feud very seriously and applied it to his work and the mentality of the show. Heyman was said to have been very proud of the likes of Apollo Crews, Austin Theory, Angel Garza, and a lot of the wrestlers that he used that were not being used prior. He went to great lengths, particularly to get Buddy Murphy on Raw, and wanted to build more for the future of Raw than for the present. And supposedly, that was the line of thinking and the methodology that he took into that draft last year, when he took a lot of younger, fresher talent as opposed to SmackDown taking more established talent. Reminder, Fightful Wrestling Weekly drops early for all you early birds on Fightful Select, but it also drops every Tuesday. It is a bit of a collection of the exclusive news that we've had over at Fightful, but we've got some injury updates. Apollo Crews set to return on tonight's episode of Raw. He has been sidelined for weeks. Shane McMahon has been sidelined since months ago, like the Fox debut maybe. He's supposed to be back tonight. We had Mandy Rose, Otis, Tucker, and Sonya all return on SmackDown. This is great. They had all been sidelined since the COVID testing started. I don't want to speculate, but I mean, 1 + 1 = 2 there. Don't know what their situation is. We did a lot of updates on the inactive and injury list, because it's not just an injury list. We put inactives there as well. Aria Davari has not wrestled since March 13th. Brian Kendrick has not wrestled since March 13th. The Performance Center era started right after that. Both Velveteen Dream and Tommaso Ciampa have been off NXT TV since June 7th for far different reasons. Velveteen Dream in hot water with the company. Tommaso Ciampa not in hot water with the company. Kushida has been off WWE TV since May 27th. And then AEW, they got a lot of people stuck outside the country. Shayna, Pac, and all the Stronghearts are effectively stuck outside the company right now. Over in New Japan, Juice Robinson has a right leg injury and has been pulled from August shows. We're working to find out more on that, but we do have some contract updates as well. Leon Ruff reportedly signed with WWE. This is great news. There was a report that Anthony Green has signed with the company. I am told that that is far from finalized as of yet, but WWE has had interest in him. Matt Cardona, Wrestling Inc. reported that he was on a 5-appearance deal, and Sportskeeda's Riccicino had confirmed with Matt Cardona that it is a short-term deal, but he does want to end up doing something longer-term there. Looks like that's what's going to happen with Eddie Kingston, as he has signed with the company after his impressive performance against Cody in the TNT Championship match. Good for him. We already had Davey Boy Smith Jr. listed on our contract section as having a multi-year deal in January 2019. He confirmed that he signed through December 2020. Let's go ahead and hit you with some stats. Now, these stats are as of July 31st. Again, up for all you early birds. And then they're up on Sundays, Fightful Select or Fightful.com usually. Mustafa Ali and Bobby Lashley had their first ever singles match on Monday. They've also competed in Royal Rumbles and tag team matches. Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax technically had their first singles match on Monday, but competed against each other at Money in the Bank as well. Gallus have hit 300 days as NXT UK champions. There have been no title changes on that brand this year. Kaylee Ray continues to extend her 330-plus day reign as NXT UK Women's Champion, by far the longest in history. Aaron Stevens is the longest reigning NWA National Champion of this regime and the second longest since 2012. Leon Ruff has worked 9 WWE matches in the COVID-19 era and 10 since December, working across Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, NXT, 205 Live, and Evolve. Dolph Ziggler has now lost 7 WWE title matches in a row dating back to December 2016 and 10 straight world title matches. Cody successfully defended the TNT Championship 4 times in July. Warhorse made his cable TV debut on AEW Dynamite. Nick Aldis has held the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship longer than anyone in the 2000s. Outside of Dan Severn, it's the longest reign since Harley Race from 1977 to 1979. Aldis has passed Pat O'Connor to reach number 9 all-time in combined days as champion. AJ Styles is the second oldest WWE Intercontinental Champion of all time, behind only Ric Flair, and he's a bit behind Ric Flair, about 10 years behind Ric Flair. Styles successfully defended that WWE Intercontinental title 3 times in July, so both he and Cody are staying very active on these quote-unquote secondary championships and defending them often. Big E's last televised one-on-one win before Friday that was not a trick or street fight was 3 years ago in a June 2017 win against Jimmy Uso. He had lost 7 non-trick or street fight one-on-one matches since. Hot dog. Then I have stats from Talking Shopamania 1. Oh boy. Chavo Guerrero and Ron Reese have both worked matches every decade since the 1990s. Brian Pillman Jr. has now worked 2 matches that feature the Yeti or Ron Reese. What the hell? Chavo Guerrero technically worked his first match of the year, according to Cage Match. The same thing goes for D'Lo Brown. Hornswoggle has worked a pay-per-view in each of the last 3 years across WWE, Impact, and Talkin' Shopamania. This, of course, being the case considering the fact that it was on traditional pay-per-view, which means that this is also Sick Boy, also known as Scott Vick's, first pay-per-view match ever and his first televised match since 1999. Alex Kozlov technically wrestled his first match in over 5 years. Gallows, Anderson, and Heath Slater have all appeared on WWE, Impact, and Talkin' Shopamania pay-per-views over the past year. Chico El Luchador, Chavo Guerrero and Chad Too Bad all became Talking Shop champions. And Chad Too Bad won the first ever Boner Yard match. Rapid Delivery Rory Fox has now appeared on cable TV or pay-per-view in the 1990s, 2000s, and 2020s, but wasn't listed as doing so in the 2010s. Thank you guys so much. Until next time, we're out.